Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Wow, what a Sunday it was in the National Football League. Excited to get into it all here on this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, alongside former NFL GM Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. We'll have Thomas Gable join us in about a half an hour, and in hour two, Albert Breer talking all things trade deadline ahead of tomorrow's Halloween trade deadline. Who's going to scare some of the contenders potentially in the National Football League with who they pick up? But Michael, wow, I was scared yesterday. We have the San Francisco 49ers and Kansas City Chiefs, a couple of contenders down the stretch that end up going down in interesting ways. We have quarterbacks that just continue to drop like flies. What were some of your big takeaways from yesterday, my friend?
Yeah, that's what I said on the podcast. Uncle Junior used to say, oh, they're dropping like flies, right? I mean, that's the way I felt like watching those games yesterday. Poor Kirk Cousins, last year of his contract. His Achilles, that's horrible. Watching some of the other quarterbacks play, we saw Kenny Pickett go out. We saw some bad quarterbacking play in the Meadowlands. That was atrocious. Tyrod Taylor goes out. So, yeah, it was difficult. I think the difference between the good teams, San Francisco and Kansas City, I felt like watching Kansas City, they lost the game. I thought watching San Francisco, Cincinnati beat them. I thought there were two different things. I mean, when you go through it and, it's not typical for Patrick Mahomes to have that many turnovers or their offense to turn the ball over. They scored 24 points, the Denver Broncos. They got the ball at the Chief 39. They got the ball at midfield. They got the ball at the Chief 10. They got the ball at the Chief 20. That tallied into 24 points. They even turned the ball over in Chief territory. So I think that was just one of those blips in the road. Mahomes had the flu, which is explainable. As we said on the show yesterday, I mean, I know Joe Montana had hypothermia and came out in the Cotton Bowl and won it, but Mahomes didn't look himself. Whereas for the 49ers, and I hate to break this to you, but I was on them all for all the wrong reasons. I didn't handicap that game well at all. And the Bengals surprised me with how they played, how their offensive line played, how Burrow played, and how poorly this 49er defense looks, especially not creating negative plays or ever getting control of the game. Because from the start of that game to the last of the game, I never felt like the 49ers had any chance to win, let alone cover the 4 points.
Well, and I think that goes back to what you're saying, comparing these two games too, because for the Kansas City Broncos game, even with all of the mistakes that Kansas City was making and Denver being in control for the entire game largely, you still felt at any moment up until the fourth quarter, like Kansas City's still gonna, they could still come back and they could still do this. I didn't feel that with San Francisco either, Michael. And Joe Burrow coming off of the bye, he showed his athleticism, his mobility. He's starting to get back to normal, getting to 100%. San Francisco looked off in just about every facet. And I think it's interesting because you talked so much about the 49ers being really like two plays away from still being undefeated those last couple of games. And then they come into this one, and it seems like all the little things that we thought that they had overcome still were there. And so it's Brock Purdy with the interceptions, obviously, and it's back-to-back games now that he has two second half interceptions that you just can't have. It's the defense. Where is Nick Bosa? Where is Javon Hargrave showing up? I never hear his name after. I feel like the secondary's not delivering. It's really strange based on what we were talking about San Francisco the first 5 weeks of the year.
Yeah, and I mean, when you break it down too, right? I mean, they couldn't create a negative play. I mean, Armstead had two negative plays, but other than that, they really had a hard time getting the Bengals into second and 14, second and 12. And that's where they live off. But like I said on the pod today, everything in football, we tend to react to great. This team's great. That team's great. Well, there are times they look great in situations. For example, when the Niners are playing from in front, that defense looks great. Mm-hmm. When the Niners are not playing from in front, that defense looks very beatable. And their defensive front, which is what the strength of their team is, when that doesn't take over the game, how are they going to win the game? Purdy's going to catch all the crap, right? But look, the opening drive of the game for the 49ers is probably the most important thing. They went three plays and punted. Next thing you know, they're down 7 points. And they got back in the game, but then they couldn't do anything in the second quarter. And they got fortunate that that fumble happened right before the half, right? Because the Bengals don't score. Again, what happens in the fourth quarter? We keep talking about this all the time. Why do you bet against Arizona when the point spread? They rarely score in the fourth quarter. The Bengals put 14 points on them in the fourth quarter. The Chiefs don't score in the second half. How many times are you going to say, honestly, the Chiefs are not scoring in the second half?
Yeah,
against the team that gave up 70. Now, I know they're playing better, but come on now, right? That wasn't the Chiefs. What has to worry you, and I think this kind of goes into, and we'll talk to Albert Breer later, I think the Niners are going to feel a little sense of desperation.
I agree with you, and I think it also, you know, we talked about the Eagles and how they go out and get Kevin Byard last week, and it's adding to an area of need. I think the 49ers are going to try to be aggressive when it comes to the next 24 hours and what they're able to do at the trade deadline, because it's clear that they're missing something, and they're still obviously odds-on favorite in the division. They are still tied with the Philadelphia Eagles to go ahead and win the NFC. But losing these three games, I think, is significant. And I know it's not how you start, which is the 5-0 start. It's how you finish. And if they can claw their way out of this, that's going to be important. What are your impressions of where Cincinnati is at right now? Because they, of course, had a slow start, and they are just coming to form. Even the offensive line looked good yesterday.
They did. And I thought their game plan was good, too. Their play calling was good. Remember now, they only had 9 third downs in the game. So when you are a defense like San Francisco that relies on the pass rush and you don't get into third down, they were only in 8 third downs, the Bengals. That means they were playing Canadian football. They were converting first downs and 2 downs. You know, and they averaged 6.5 yards a play. You know, they were averaging 6.5 yards a play. So they were in control of the game from start to finish, and they kept the 49ers off balance. I thought Burrow was great. I thought they mixed up what they were doing. I thought they really spent a lot of time in the bye week of doing a self-scout, of saying, okay, here's where we are. Here's what we need to do. And defensively, they hung in there. They created enough turnovers. I mean, they gave up. The Niners actually outgained them. Nobody would believe this. They outgained them. They had a better yards per play than the Niners did, but then the Bengals did. But they turned the ball over, and you can't do that against a good team. I kind of get the sense that maybe they would have been better off playing Darnold, was because Purdy didn't look like he was the same guy.
Well, and Michael, I don't want to make excuses for the 49ers, but I know that's what it's going to sound like in this spot. But you look at the way they're coming off that Monday Night Football game against the Vikings last week. Purdy goes into the concussion protocol late. They have the short turnaround with travel from Minnesota, taking on a Bengals team that's coming off of the bye. So ample time to prepare. It's an imbalance from that standpoint. And a guy that, are we sure that he should have been 100% like ready to go in that game in general when we hadn't seen another player go through the protocol in such a short time as we did Brock Purdy this week? That was something that I know everybody was shocked that Brock Purdy ended up clearing the protocol as quickly as he did.
You're right. And what I was also shocked was their inability to run the football.
Sure.
I mean,
again,
think about it.
That's not just a one-time sample size.
I mean, they averaged 8.2 a play, but they only had 113 yards rushing, 23 carries. That's not what Shanahan wants to do. And once again, they get to the fourth quarter, they're down by a touchdown. What happens? That guarantee a loss. I mean, that number is kind of interesting to throw around, 39 straight losses if you're down by 8 points or more in the fourth quarter. But it really is revealing. Now, look, I know they miss Trent Williams. They miss him badly. Mm-hmm. And last year, they kind of went through a similar thing in the middle of the season. Remember, they lose to Atlanta. They lose to Kansas City at home. And then all of a sudden, they explode. This happens to teams. In 2002, when I was with the Raiders, we start 4-0. Things look really good. Go to St. Louis, get beat. Next thing you know, we lose 4 in a row. And we go to Monday Night Football to play Denver, and everybody's got us buried. We're going to lose the game. We win that game and go on to win the rest of them. So it's really about San Francisco figuring out what's wrong with our team. Why are we not being able to do the things we need to do to get us the lead and play from in front. And I don't think it's as much offensively as it is they've got to look at what they're doing defensively.
Yeah, and again, I think that's where it's going to be important at the trade deadline, see what they end up doing if they do go grab a piece, whether it's for that secondary or somebody to come off of the edge for San Francisco. And the offense, too, though, it's not like they've scored over 20 points the last 3 weeks either. So I think it's just everything needs to get back on track and get together. Joe Burrow, 283 yards, 3 touchdowns, had 43 on the ground. And this is after coming into the game with just 14 rushing yards the previous games combined. 43 yesterday. We saw that one play, Michael, where he should have been sacked by Nick Bosa. He should have been sacked again. Gets out of it. Ends up getting the first down. So I think you're seeing from his standpoint, like, the back to normal 100% Joe Burrow, yeah, which is a scary thing in the AFC if I am a Kansas City or if I am one of those other teams on top right now.
Right, and I am Buffalo, who's coming to town. And Buffalo's not playing their best. Now, look, I still think defensively they're not quite there. And the Niners, but they're able to get control of the game with their offense. And, you know, that's a good sign if you're a Bengal fan. They really look good in the game. And they got the ball to Chase. They got the ball Tyler Boyd. Got the ball to Higgins. I mean, their weapons showed up. And they're a talented team if they protect. And they did yesterday. They were able to, and his movement creates more problems. I mean, when he scrambles for first downs, it eliminates you trying to play cover two man under, because he takes you right out of it. So, and he only, what, he threw 4 incomplete passes the entire day. He was great. I mean, I'm watching the game knowing I gave out San Francisco as a recommendation. And from the first quarter, Stormy, I'm like, this is the, I'm on the wrong side of this. You just know it right away.
Yeah, his best performance of the year by far to this point. You talk about getting those rushing first downs. That's what made him such a difference maker last season. We hadn't had the opportunity to see much of that. We are once again here from that standpoint. Now, you mentioned off the top, Kirk Cousins, a lot of the quarterback injuries. We have a number of them to get into when we come back here on the break. Cousins, Stafford, Tyrod Taylor, Daniel Jones, Desmond Ridder, Jalen Hurts, like the list goes on and on. So stay with us here on the Lombardi Line. We'll update you on all of the latest when we return.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For anyone who didn't know, today is the sports equinox. It's the only day this year where all 4 major sports are in action. We got Monday Night Football, World Series Game 3, 11 games in the NBA, 9 in the NHL. And our team, to help you celebrate, has put together a VSiN Sports Equinox Parlay at DraftKings Sportsbook. Here it is. Get your pencil out. Hurricanes Flyers over 6 goals. Lions minus 4.5 in the first half of the Monday Night Football game tonight. Diamondbacks first 5, take them there. And the Magic plus 1.5 against the Lakers. LeBron's questionable, so that line moved down from 4. But the 1.5, that is the Sports Equinox VSiN Parlay at DraftKings. The crown is yours. Make sure you get the DraftKings Sportsbook app today. And that parlay set up right there. I already saw on the screen earlier today, Michael, over 1,000 people have got in, joined the party with us. Should be fun. And we talk about, I teased, Michael, the quarterback injuries on Monday Night Football. Jimmy Garoppolo back out there for the Raiders as they head out to Detroit tonight.
Yeah, I mean, big one for the Raiders, right? I mean, you know, look, it's going to be a challenge because of this front for Detroit's really good. It's hard to run the ball. The Raiders want to run the ball, even though they haven't had a 100-yard rusher all season. They're going to have to throw the football and protect on the road is a challenge. And one thing we've seen from Detroit is their ability, when they get in front, play from in front, they make it very challenging on opponents. You can throw the ball on Detroit. There's no question you can. Can you protect well enough? And that's going to be the challenge for the Raiders. Plus, you know, without the great running game, without Montgomery, you know, we'll see a little bit more of Gibbs. Can they actually get off the field on third down? When the Raiders have gone on the road, whether it was Buffalo, they have struggled. Even in Chicago, they had a hard time getting off the road on third down.
Yeah, bettors have been all over Jahmyr Gibbs over his rushing yards prop, by the way, today. Our leg of that parlay was the Lions minus 4.5 in the first half. And my reasoning for that, obviously, this team is better than they showed last week against the Baltimore Ravens. They got boat raced from the opening kickoff, but I was looking through their games, Michael. Detroit had at least a touchdown lead in the first half in five straight games prior to what happened last week. They'll be excited. It's the second time ever hosting Monday Night Football since 2014. And Jared Goff, much more productive at home as well. So a lot of reasons, yeah. I think, to like Lions early. Yeah.
That place will be rocking tonight. I mean, it's a great venue. That place will be really rocking tonight. It'll be loud. And the Raiders can't, you know, here's what happens when you're a team that goes on the road like that. You end up getting false starts. You play from behind the down. And see, Cincinnati goes out there and they don't play from behind the down and distance. They control first down. The Raiders' biggest issue this year is their inability to win first down. You know, they haven't been able to run, because they keep trying to run on first down. They have not been a good first down team, getting positive yards, getting to second and seven, and then converting. You know, they've been in too many third down situations, which ultimately, you know, the more third downs you get into, I know people say, well, let's just get in a third and manageable. That doesn't work. I mean, Cincinnati showed really the formula on how you want to be a good offense. You stay out of third downs as much as you can.
The Raiders getting 7 in Detroit for this one, for the game spread total 46.5. We'll revisit this game a little bit, see how bettors are playing it with Thomas Gable in about 15 minutes or so. But let's get into, the big news coming out of yesterday that Kirk Cousins, unfortunately, looks like he torn the Achilles. Obviously, the MRI to confirm, but everybody knew when they saw it. It's just so obvious when it is an Achilles injury, and such a crushing blow, Michael, for a Vikings team that was really trending up after that 1-4 start. Looked like they had pulled things together, still end up winning 24-10 yesterday in a division matchup with the Packers. But how tough is this now for the way that we want to view Minnesota moving forward? And of course, Kirk Cousins as an individual who's going to be a free agent after this year.
Well, welcome to the pack, Minnesota. Life without a quarterback. We got a bunch of teams over here in the corner that you can join them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough, right? And it's a shame because they were playing really good defensively, right? They held San Francisco down to 65 yards rushing, right? They did a great job against Chicago. They held them down. Chicago couldn't move the ball. You know, even the Kansas City game, that was there for the taking. They had their opportunity. You know, the one that they really let get away were the Chargers. They turned the ball. Remember all we talked about on the Minnesota Vikings were the red zone turnovers earlier in the year, and they've cut them down.
Yep.
And their defense improved as the year went along, but now it's going to be a really tough struggle because, you know, they're going to find out what life is like without Cousins, even though they know they've overpaid him. But life with Jaren Hall might not be the same. You know, he's 25 years old. He played sparingly. He played the preseason in the three games. He threw the ball 46 times. You know, everybody says, well, they'll go out and trade for a quarterback. Who are they getting?
Colt McCoy.
Who's giving
is the
up
name
a quarterback?
That comes to mind?
Tell me.
I said Colt McCoy comes to mind, and Elliot said Carson Wentz.
I mean, to me, it'll be somebody from the Kevin O'Connell family tree, right? He was in Arizona, but he was in Los Angeles, and he was also in Washington, and I think he might have been there with Colt. So that does make some sense, you know, because he'll know. But can Colt stay healthy? I mean, it's the same thing. You know, I liked the Giants yesterday, and I kept saying for 2 weeks, remember now, if you bet the Giants, you know, you're one play away from Tommy DeVito, right? And what happened yesterday?
He looked like
one
Danny
play
DeVito
away from
out
Tommy
there.
DeVito. Yeah. So it's the same thing. You know, you go with Colt, you're one play away from Jared Hall anyway, because Colt has a hard time staying healthy at his age and where he is. And there's no answers. If there were answers out there, we wouldn't have so many bad quarterbacks playing. And this notion you're going to trade for one, who are you trading for? I mean, P.J. Walker, I mean, he was horrible yesterday. I mean, he cost them the game at the end of the game. They had a chance to beat Seattle, you know, and they throw double slants on both sides and the ball gets tipped. Next thing you know, 54 yards away, they score a touchdown. They win in cover.
Yeah, and O'Connell does have that connection with Colt McCoy, was his quarterback's coach in Washington, he was. But yeah, to your point, if he can stay healthy, Jaren Hall, fifth-round rookie out of BYU, he backed up Zach Wilson for a couple of years. He has been injury-prone himself, though, Michael, so that's some information to have in the back pocket. He's a mobile guy. He takes some bad hits at times when he doesn't get down. The The Vikings right now are sitting in that seventh spot in the NFC. So they're in wild card position with a soft schedule ahead. And you just really, really feel for this team because Kirk Cousins was playing some of the best football of his career, honestly, lately. He was tied with Tua Tagovailoa, leading the NFL in touchdown passes, second to Tua in passing yards at this point. And things seem to be clicking, 70% completions on the year. So what that means for them long term, we'll have to wait and see. And by the way, I know that yesterday wasn't the greatest day for me in general in terms of my leans, but I loved the Vikings in the first half of this game. The Packers continue to start slow.
Yeah, that's a discussion that has to be had. I mean, this Packer team, you know, in terms of what I thought this summer, where they could play good defense and try to win, they're not. I mean, they can't get anything going through their quarterback. The offensive line doesn't really play, and they start slow. I mean, they had a chance in the fourth quarter in this game. I mean, they get the ball spotted on their own on the Viking 15, and the next thing you know, they can't score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Cousins went out, you're thinking, okay, but you never got the sense from Green Bay that they were going to be able to turn this thing around. I mean, Green Bay is offensively bad in the first half. I mean, they're bad in the second half. They haven't, you know, look, let's face it. They've lost to Atlanta. They've lost to the Raiders. They've lost to a bad Denver team, and they lost to Minnesota after that. And so they can't run the ball. They had 74 yards running against Minnesota. You know, even when they ran the ball against the Raiders, they turned the ball over three times. So, you know, the question is, if you're Green Bay, you got seven games with Jordan Love, you know, he doesn't complete against a team that doesn't play great pass defense, had a hard time completing passes. You're going to have to ask yourself, where are we going?
Especially given the quarterback talent we know that is going to be there in this year's draft. They started the season 2-1, dropped four straight now as they get set for week 9 moving ahead.
Here's what I would say about Green Bay. Everybody says, well, they're not talented. I would say this. If Green Bay would have hired Schwartz instead of Cleveland, they keep Joe Barry, Green Bay's defense would have looked a lot better. I'm just saying, Green Bay's defense is better than we see. I know they're 30, you know, they don't stop the run very well, you know, but I just think from a front seven standpoint, they're better than where they ranked at 21st in terms of yards allowed, in terms of rushing yards allowed, all those areas.
They did, by the way, and in case anybody missed it, they did lock up Rashawn Gary to a 4-year extension earlier today. $96 million contract extension based on new money, 34.5 signing bonus, making him now one of the highest paid pass rushers in the National Football League. Just to cement the Packers' slow starts, though, they have been outscored 73-9 in the first half, their last five games. Haven't scored a touchdown before halftime in any of them. Took five series before they got their first down yesterday. We have so much more to talk about recapping Sunday, Michael. We still didn't even get into the mayhem in MetLife that we saw. What a miraculous win for the New York Jets. ESPN Analytics.
Oh my God.
ESPN Analytics, Michael, had that a 99.9% chance for the Giants to win with about a minute and 19 left in the game. They end up losing in overtime.
I mean, it's impossible. And I mean, I had that game. I was picked that one, and I didn't think I was going to win it. And then when they teased me, it got me right to the brink. And I'm counting it as a win. And I'm going to just – and then Russo, oh, my God, we got to go over that. My Russo picks, oh, horrible.
Yes. Okay, we have that.
I still won the week, thank God. Thank God for Baltimore's allowing the onside kick.
That's all that matters. We have that. We have some – Panthers winning their first game. Who is this Will Levis? Round two, who? But first, Thomas Gable coming up next. Don't miss it.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page where you can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard where you can view betting records, profit, and ROI to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, betting guides, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can do so for only $120 through May 1st, VSiN.com/subscribe. subscribe. We're rolling along here alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we're going to head behind the counter now to our good friend, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. And we were just talking in the commercial break, what a wild day it was in the NFL yesterday. The Chiefs and 49ers both get upset. And where we'll start here actually is with the Giants and Jets mayhem that took place in that last minute and a half of regulation and then into overtime. I know you guys get a lot of Giants money out there, Giants folks out there in the book. What was that like where you go from it looks like they're going to win straight up, have no problem, to -3 push with the Jets winning 13-10?
Yeah. I mean, that's basically a civil war game for us between the Giants and Jets fans. So it's evenly split here, but more Jets money showed up here. So we actually needed the Giants. We were on the side. We needed the Giants to cover the 3. And that game was 3 pretty much through the week. I think it did touch 2.5, maybe on Tuesday for a few hours, but mostly it was 3. And for the Giants to lose that, Giants bettors to just get the push on that, not great. We did end up winning on the total in that game. Very low total, close to 34.5. I don't think people thought that game would stay under the 34.5. But so we did win on the total, but certainly would have been a better result had the Giants been able to close a deal on that. I mean, and I don't know, at least locally here, the other thing that happened with that game, it was on CBS, and then CBS cuts away from it when it's in overtime to start the 49ers game. And there was an eruption in the book when that happened. So we had to scramble to find the other channel for the Jets and Giants to finish that one out. But yeah, not a great beat there for Giants backers. And you have to almost say the same thing for the Eagles and the Commanders game yesterday. The Eagles got the late touchdown there. They ran it in to go up 14 in that one. And you think, okay, if you laid the 7 there with the Eagles, you're in pretty good shape. And then the Commanders come down and score again. And that game pushes on the side as well. Another one, very similar to the Jets and the Giants game, where we ended up winning on the total, but have to push on the spread on that one. So, you had those two games, and then of course the shenanigans at the end of the Ravens Cardinals in the late slate there, where again Ravens closed 9.5-point favorites, and not a huge decision on this game for us, but I do feel bad for the people who had the Ravens there laying the 9.5, because the way that game ended and the Cardinals being able to cover that number there and getting the onside kick and the late field goal, it was just really ridiculous. But I can tell you from here, there were not too many people who needed the Cardinals on their tickets, just from the reactions we were seeing and hearing from people. But yeah, I mean, it was a wild, wild Sunday with a lot of these games. I mean, when you kind of go down the list here, Saints and Colts, Saints pretty much in command in that one, 38-27 final. They easily covered a 2.5 there. Game flies over the 43.5 total where that closed at. Not a great result for us in that one. The Jags and Steelers, again, Jags close 2.5-point favorites. Steelers once again struggled to muster any offense, 2010 final there. And not too much of a decision on that one. The Texans and the Panthers, another game that came down to at least the winner. The Panthers were obviously going to be able to cover, but they end up getting the win 15-13 on the field goal. There's time expired. But good for us on the side in that one. Not so much the total. Ended up losing on the total in that one. Rams and Cowboys, that game was over pretty early. Cowboys just looked, you know, offensively like a juggernaut again. 43-20 final there. Cowboys closed as a 7-point favorite up from 6 where they opened. So no problems there for Cowboy backers. And obviously the total, if you had the over in that game, you weren't sweating that much at all with the way the Cowboys poured it on right from the start. Patriots and Dolphins, not too much of a decision on that one for us. Dolphins do cover that. Patriots were taking a little bit of money there. Dolphins opened as 10.5-point favorites in that game, and it actually closed 7.5. So Patriots did take some money there. And then the Falcons and the Titans, Will Levis debut. I don't know if you've already touched on this one, guys, but you saw Levis come in and gets the job done, and Titans win the game, even though they're 2.5-point dogs there at home, 28-23. And Michael, is this a case where here, you know, not quite sure what you're going to get out of Levis, and now that a team has some tape on him, might be a different story here moving forward, or just did you like what you saw?
Well, I mean, he played well, and they gave him some explosiveness down the field with his throws and his arm. I don't know if it'll continue, because now you have kind of a look at what their offense looks like with him under center and not Tannehill. That's always the case. You know, the longer rookies play, like we saw with C.J. Stroud, the more defensive coordinators get a handle on, okay, here's what he wants to do, here's where he wants to throw the ball. I want to go back to that Jet-Giant game. I mean, I'm at Bill's house, and, you know, the same thing happened for us, and I'm trying to tell him to get him on the game, and, you know, and we can't. Oh, by the way, YouTube yesterday I thought was a disaster. My TV was freezing constantly, couldn't see the game.
No way.
It was the worst experience I've had with YouTube so far this year. It was really bad. But my thing was, why try the field goal? People say, well, you're up by 6. Yeah, but you're still prone to a touchdown. Okay, so, you know, and I understand that. But if you turn it over there, which is what happens on a missed field goal, the ball is spotted 7 yards. I think with 24 seconds left, with the amount of time that was left on that, I think he'd have been better off taking DeVito, taking 5 steps backwards off a shotgun, and thrown the ball as high up into the air as he put your punt team out there. And let the punter throw the ball as high up into the air as you possibly can. And the clock doesn't stop until the ball comes down. And if you throw it to the back of the end zone, you know it's not going to get grounding if you got a receiver over there. And you're going to eat away time, and then they don't pick up the free 7 yards, and life goes on. Now, the guy should have missed it, but do you realize that Cano wasn't healthy? Like they kept saying on the sideline, he wasn't healthy.
Yeah, he was compromised.
Yeah, bad situation. So he misses the field goal. Obviously, Zach Wilson, like, who was that Zach Wilson? The couple of throws that he made, like, that was not the guy we saw for the previous 58 minutes. So a very impressive way for the Jets to go on and win that game. The Giants had -9 passing yards, the fewest for a team that had an overtime game in NFL history. Not a club that you want to be a part of. TG, let's close things out here talking Monday Night Football. The Raiders headed out there to Detroit to take on the Lions. Lions laying 7, it looks like, pretty much across the board out here. Total 46.5. Where are you guys at? And are you guys seeing some Raiders love like some other folks are?
Seeing a lot of Raiders money here today, a lot. Again, we were at 7.5 earlier this morning, so we took Raiders money there at 7.5. Now it's 7. That's kind of dried up at the moment. The other thing we're seeing Raiders money in the first half, and we were at 4.5 there. And again, they just it was really a play to grab that 4.5. Now at 4, not so popular of a play. Also seeing some sharper money there to the under. So, you know, this game opened the Lions 7.5 and total opened at 44.5. So total has ticked up a couple points there from the opener. Now pretty much 46.5 is where you're seeing it market wise. Seeing some 46s, I guess, out there for the total, but I think this is a game here where, and I know there's reports of St. Brown there on Detroit. He may have the flu, may not be 100% there, but I think this is a game here where this could have a potential to have a lot of points here put up.
Great stuff, Thomas. Thanks so much for doing this as always on
Thanks,
a Monday.
Thanks, TG.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook out there at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Also, while we kind of wrap up some thoughts on that Giants game, according to the New York Post earlier this morning, Daniel Jones was given clearance for contact on Sunday prior to the game. And the expectation is that he will be available when the Giants face the Raiders this coming week in Las Vegas. Obviously, Tyrod Taylor injured with the rib during the game. Tommy DeVito steps in. It was an abysmal offensive performance for all of the teams from New York yesterday. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Now, let's dive in to this Titans team a little bit more here, Michael, because with the injured Ryan Tannehill on the bench, in steps the rookie Will Levis in his NFL debut. All he does is go out and throw for four touchdowns, no picks, and double what we had seen the last handful of games from Ryan Tannehill in terms of touchdown production. So, basically everybody that thought that he was going to be picked early in the draft is probably like, oh, dang, you know what? Day two for Will Levis, he shouldn't have been sitting around after all. What did you make of the performance, a 28-23 win for Tennessee?
Well, you know, you got to give them credit. They made explosive plays, Stormy, something they typically hadn't been able to do all year. Burks was back. That helps. Hopkins made a play down the field, and he threw the ball really well. I mean, you know, he threw the ball down the field. It wasn't down after down that he was dominating, but he got the lead play from in front, you know, and he was able to use his running game, which is obviously very critical. I mean, he averaged 8.2 yards per completion, per attempt. I mean, Tannehill was at 7.1, and Tannehill only threw two touchdown passes in 158 attempts, and this kid threw four in just 29. So it was really a hell of a day. Now, do you think it's going to continue? I don't know, but I think the fact that they were able to run the ball, play good defense, great uniforms, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
You can't knock those. I mean, those were great, right? And The receivers made explosive plays, and you think about it. Hopkins had his longest play of the game, and so did Burks. And so they were able to utilize that and made it a closer game. I think losing Grady Jarrett for the Falcons, he tore his ACL during the game. I think that really hurt their run defense and their ability to rush the passer.
Yep, Grady Jarrett, season-ending ACL injury. Desmond Ridder was also evaluated for a concussion. He got cleared but didn't come back into the game. Michael, was that another situation you think similar to what we saw with Deshaun Watson a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, Atlanta couldn't convert on third down when he was in the game. It was a painful. I mean, he fumbled again, you know, and so I think they had no choice. And I felt like probably if you're Arthur Smith, you're saying, well, if I put him back in, he makes mistakes. Then is it because of the concussion or is he just making mistakes? But it was interesting. Heinicke said after the game, this is Ridder's team. He's the starting quarterback. So clearly he's coming back to be the starter. It's the same thing that happened in Arizona. You know, right after that game, Jonathan Gannon made it very clear. There'll be no Kyler Murray next week. It's going to be Joshua Dobbs.
Which I thought was an interesting statement, especially because he had just said earlier in the week that, hey, Kyler Murray is fully healthy right now. He's practicing in full. There were some people that were even questioning if he might be activated this week. He wasn't. So mostly looking ahead to next week, thought, okay, that would make a lot of sense. And he just put the kibosh on that right away yesterday.
Yeah, not even a debate about it, right? It just was, okay, he's not coming back. You know, whereas, I mean, if you're Tennessee, you got to feel good. Okay, Levis, you got him in the second round. Let's see what he can do. You know, one thing we do know, if we watch C.J. Stroud, he kind of has gotten into a little bit. People understand what he's doing. People have a feel for it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, he'll come around it and he'll figure out how defenses are playing him. He's an inexperienced player. Well, I think the same thing will happen to Levis as well. But, you know, for right now, I mean, he threw the ball with good accuracy. He was able to get it down the field, which is, look, you're not going to beat anybody throwing four-yard checks down. Now, when it became a third-down game, that's when he got in a little bit of trouble, you know, because he was 5 for 15 on third down. But if you don't make it a third down game, you got a chance. And when you hit those long home runs, it keeps the chains moving. You don't have to worry about third down.
So Michael, to your point though, about obviously like no other teams really have tape on Will Levis yet, right? Like they do with CJ Stroud. So when you look at the Titans' future this season, like after they have a performance like that, a lot of people, I think on the outside looking in are like, okay, well now do you want to trade other assets away or do you want to see what this kid can do and put it together? Because maybe there's still potential life in the division or to get a wild card spot. Like, are we thinking too much into one singular performance from Will Levis?
Well, no, but I think it you know, look, the South is not over with, right? I mean, right. I know they're 3-4, but they still have a chance and it gives them a chance. I think they're really good on defense. I think they traded Byard, you know, really because they felt like he was a declining player. I think there's a misconception. Sometimes we think selling off assets and sometimes they're selling off a declining player. Remember, they wanted him to take a pay cut and then they went through a whole machination of getting him to take a pay cut. I mean, they signed Hopkins. I think they're fully vested. I don't want to walk into Mike Vrabel's office and say, look, we're just trading away a guy who scored a 61-yard touchdown. I don't think they're going to do that. You know, they made it very clear they're not trading Henry. And look, Henry yesterday was good.
Yeah.
I mean, they needed him. You know, if you're going to play the young quarterback, you got to run. And this team is not good enough up front. Their offensive line struggles. But yesterday when they had balance and they can run for a $150, you know, without having a long run in there and they put Spears in the game. Remember, for as good as Baltimore is, I mean, they're in this Baltimore game to the bitter end, right? It wasn't until they had to bring Willis in. This isn't a horrible team. This is a team like a lot of teams that have problems that haven't been able to get a lot of production out of their quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, the Jags are a odds-on favorite for a reason in the division, and they do have a significant lead, 6-2 on the year to this point. But you said it, it's not over yet. There's a whole lot of runway still to go in this season, and if they could put it together, who knows what that could mean. In the division, 13-1 right now. Jags, a $5 favorite. Tennessee's getting 3 at Pittsburgh this coming short week, Thursday Night Football, taking on a Steelers team. By the way, Kenny Pickett had to leave yesterday's game with a first-half rib injury. In comes MVP Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, that was bad from the start, though. I mean, look, you know, I said this. Remember we were talking about the landmines? There was a bunch of them, yeah. Right? We know there were 9 home dogs.
So the Titans were the right Pittsburgh. Home dog. The Steelers were not.
Right. The Steelers reminded me of everybody was on the Chargers last week, 2 weeks ago in Kansas City. Remember when they were 5.5, me included? They were 5.5-point favorites, and everybody said, oh, they always play close games. Well, the Mike Tomlin underdog came into play here. Everybody played that and lost because, you know, let's face it, they couldn't do anything offensively even when Pickett was in the game. The first 4 drives of the game, they went 3-and-out. They're punting. Now, they kept themselves in the game because they held them to field goals. I mean, the Jaguars start out with 6-place field goal, 7-play field goal, fumble, interception, then field goal to end the half. I mean, they only scored 9 points in the first half, but not to be outdone. I mean, the Steelers go 4-3 and outs. They don't get their first down until like under 9 minutes mm-hmm. to go in the second quarter. They kick a field goal, then they miss a field goal. And then by the second half, Mitch turns it over twice in the fourth quarter. It was over. So, I mean, you can only go so far with your defense kind of keeping you in the game. And they just couldn't do it. And, you know, now with Mitch on a short week against a Tennessee team that matches them physically, you know, they're not going to push around, but the problem is going to be for Tennessee. Can they protect? I mean, Tennessee's tackles are still not good. They got away with it against Atlanta. It's hard to get away with it at home again, on the road in Pittsburgh with Watt and Highsmith and all those guys coming off the edge.
Another young quarterback who you mentioned here in the segment already, CJ Stroud. He and Bryce Young went head-to-head yesterday in Carolina. It came down to a walk-off field goal. Eddie Pinheiro ends up winning it for the Carolina Panthers, 15-13, the final. And I hesitate to use the word outdueled, but good for Bryce Young technically outdueling CJ Stroud in a game that was yeah. so important for him, right?
I don't know if it was a duel.
I don't know if that's the right word, but.
I think if it was a duel, they were using slingshots, not guns. Because it was, I watched this game because as I thought I was on Carolina, especially in my Russo picks. Yep. So I was watching this game. And of course, Frank Wright, you know, why anytime it's 4th and short, near the red zone, he's going for it. Now, he never successful, just so we put that out there. Like, he's 1-for-4 in the red zone. Like, he has a hard time scoring points, and he's turning points down, right? He has a hard time scoring points. Do you realize? You know, and so they were able to they play great defense in the fourth quarter. They only allowed two first downs in the fourth, and they got the ball back. And they got the ball back at their own nine and drove it down the field. 15-play drive. Got 8 first downs on that drive. And they were able to kick the field goal and win the game. They got helped by a penalty. Don't get me wrong now. They did. They got helped by a penalty. And, you know, they got 2 penalties actually on that drive that really kept the drive alive. But, you know, C.J. Stroud, other than the 2 drives, he had a 17-play drive and a 12-play drive. Other than that, they were not very good. They fumbled and gave the ball to the Panthers in their own territory, which resulted in a touchdown. So, you know, to me, this was 2 bad offenses going against each other. And, you know, I just think Stroud kind of, even off the bye week, wasn't quite where he needs to be in terms of people have caught up to him a little bit.
Mm-hmm. 140 yards through the air for Stroud. Bryce Young, 22 of 31, 235 yards, a touchdown. No picks, though, which I think is important for him, you know, not turning over the ball. We joked going in that this was the Carolina Panthers and Bryce Young Super Bowl. And boy, did they celebrate like it after that field goal was made. And officially, the hands went up from the officials there. We're going to step aside. We'll reset for hour 2, some of the big takeaways from what was a hectic NFL Sunday, as well as previewing Monday Night Football with the Raiders headed out there to Detroit taking on the Lions. Still a number of games to get to. I just can't get over what yesterday was. Wild, wild day in the NFL.